Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Questions remain about what certain parts of Florida's new Amendment 4 actually mean.
I think the short answer is no. There is not a document that says you have completed your sentence.
Also this week, lawmakers worry that letting a special board propose changes to the state constitution every 20 years leads to more confusion than clarity.
It is important that we get this right for the voters of Florida and that when they do go into the ballot box that there is a complete understanding of what they're voting on.
We'll also hear how various parts of Florida commemorated the lives lost and forever changed by last year's Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting, and learn that just because someone says something is illegal doesn't necessarily mean it can't be readily purchased at the corner gas station. I'm Tom Flanagan. Welcome to Capitol Report. Constitutions, whether at the state or federal level, are usually a government's foundational document. They're intended to provide an easily understood framework for day-to-day decision-making. But that's not always the case. Thursday's joint meeting of the Florida House Judiciary Committee and Criminal Justice Subcommittee brought up questions about the logistics of implementing Florida's new Amendment 4. Ryan Daly reports election supervisors still have questions.
The amendment gives automatic restoration of voting rights to people with a felony in their past, except for those convicted of murder or sexually violent offenses. But there are areas of uncertainty when it comes to who can re-register.
When someone calls our office and says, "Am I eligible to re-register?" our answer, unfortunately, right now is, "We're not really sure."
Paul Lux is Okaloosa County's supervisor of elections and is president of the state's Association of Supervisors. He says one area of confusion is what it means to complete all terms of a sentence and whether that does or doesn't include things like paying restitution and fines.
I always draw upon my own experience for this just to kind of drive the point home. And what I explain to people is this. During Hurricane Ivan, I lost a fair section of my roof. I contracted with somebody to put a new roof on my house. I gave them $4,000. They did not put a roof on my house. When they went to jail, they were told, "Give Paul Lux back his $4,000. They're no longer in jail. Paul Lux still doesn't have his $4,000. So if that person walks into my office to register tomorrow, do I accept the registration or don't I accept the registration?
Also relating to completion of sentences are conditions like community service and probation. Lee Adams heads the State Department of Corrections Bureau of Admission and Release.
We can tell you, when someone has successfully completed supervision by having completed all conditions of that supervision. In other words, they did everything they were supposed to do and they got off supervision. What we don't know is we have cases where, as I explained before, for various reasons, supervision is terminated and the person has not completed everything. Well, obviously, what happens after that, we have no way of knowing.
Second Judicial Circuit State Attorney Jack Campbell says those in his role would have the burden of answering that question. And he says the legwork would be exhaustive.
I'm going to have to do an individual investigation into every named offender. I'm going to have to run probably through all of them through FCIC, NCIC, which is the state and the national database, look at every place that they've committed a crime, and then go and individually look through every case, try to contact the victims individually, find out if they were otherwise paid restitution.
There are other points of uncertainty as well. One is definitions of murder other than first degree, like vehicular homicide, and whether people convicted of such things are eligible. Finally, Lux says when applicants ask about their eligibility, supervisors do not have a place to get that information. In an exchange, House Judiciary Committee Chair Paul Renner and Ninth Judicial Circuit Chief Judge Frederick Lawton brought up a key point. Do the formerly incarcerated even have something tangible to show for finishing a sentence?
If I pay off a car loan, I get a satisfaction, right, or a mortgage, but does an inmate that's served 20 years get something that says your debt's been paid? Chief?
Mr. Chair, I think the short answer is no. There is not a document that says you have completed your sentence.
Renner spoke with reporters after the joint meeting. Based on everything he heard, he says the goal is to make things more uniform.
I think the goal of interoperability and data fidelity, where someone can walk out of prison or walk out of their probation office when their sentence is complete and have that certificate, and everybody sees that across all the agencies that are involved, not just in voting, but occupational licensing and serving on a jury, running for office, any of these things, I think is where we want to go.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Daly.
And Amendment 4 isn't the only constitutional confusion now afflicting Florida. After the state's Constitution Revision Commission bundled its proposals on the November ballot, often linking seemingly unrelated items like indoor vaping and offshore drilling, lawmakers want some changes. Regan McCarthy reports on two bills. One would limit the commission to making single-subject proposals. The other would get rid of the board completely.
Orange Park Republican Senator Rob Bradley says when lawmakers and citizens propose changes to the state's constitution, they're bound to what's called the single subject rule. But members of the Constitution Revision Commission, called the CRC, are not.
The bundling of several issues in one constitutional amendment is a terrible way to amend our constitution. It's unfair to voters who may approve of one issue in the amendment but disapprove of another.
Bradley says a common example of an amendment that combined vaping and oil drilling isn't even the most egregious case in his mind.
They put language about counterterrorism. I mean, who supports terrorism? Everybody's against terrorism. Of course, we want to have counterterrorism measures in our government. We do them now. There was no reason to have that as a part of the Constitution. It included a Department of Veteran Affairs, which we have now. There was no reason to put that in the Constitution. As the gentleman suggested, no one was going to take that out of our list of state departments and the concerns that we address. And all of that was window dressing to hide where I'm from, Clay County, resulted in a fundamental change to how our local government is set up.
Amendment 10 made rules about county government structure and required that certain offices must be elected. In the House, Jacksonville Beach Republican Representative Cord Byrd says he's heard from voters who are upset by being offered the choice of marking only yes or no on the bundled proposals.
The one refrain which I imagine we all heard during our campaigns over the last year was the frustration by voters of every stripe, Republican, Democrat, and Independent, over log rolling or the combining of different ideas into one constitutional amendment.
Byrd and Bradley are pushing bills that would require members of the commission to stick to a single subject. But Byrd says he'd be okay with another plan moving through the legislature as well.
It is important that we get this right for the voters of Florida, and that when they do go into the ballot box, that there is a complete understanding of what they're voting on. So I think this has broad support. I know Representative Drake will be presenting some additional ideas regarding the Constitutional Revision Commission. I am in support of those as well, because we do need to get this right for the voters of Florida. And whichever direction we in the Senate decide to go in, I think this is the time to do it, since it is fresh on the voters' mind.
Dofuniak Springs Republican Representative Brad Drake is behind a bill to abolish the commission. Drake says he feels the board is no longer focused on revision.
But they chose to become policymakers and inserting policy into the Constitution. And I don't think that by its very definition that's a revision. That's an insertion of new public policy. That's Representative Anton's job. That's Representative Diamond's job. That's my job.
Drake says he doesn't like the idea that people who aren't elected have the power to make policy changes. Both bills are moving through committees in the House and Senate. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Still to come on Capitol Report, Florida's new agriculture commissioner has opined that CBD or hemp oil is illegal. We seek additional opinions from a cannabis lawyer and CBD store manager.
The demographics of people that use CBD is over the age of 35. The reasons why, they do experience anxiety, chronic pain. They've lived long enough to have some sort of ache.
After years of feeling shortchanged by the legislature, the top legislative advocate for Florida's 28 colleges is cautiously optimistic about this year's session.
We were very pleased to see the governor's recommended budget that addresses needed funding for the college system and for the tech system.
And 1 year after the Parkland shooting, advocates are continuing the fight for gun reform. As Florida lawmakers grapple with changes to the state's medical marijuana rules, some are questioning how hemp fits into the picture. Hemp is a marijuana plant, but is low in THC, meaning it doesn't get people high. Instead, people say the CBD from the plant can have significant health benefits. But the two products come from plants that look and smell the same. That makes regulation and enforcement difficult and leaves hemp use and sales in something of a legal gray area. Florida Public Radio's Blaise Ganey spoke with cannabis legal expert Michael Minardi and Alex Petrick, who manages Natural Life, a shop in Tallahassee that sells CBD products.
A lot of people may not really understand the difference between CBD and the street drug marijuana. Could you sort of explain why cannabis can be the same plant, but those two can be different things?
There's cannabis and there's hemp, we'll call it, because if you talk about cannabis and CBD, then that mixes and muddles the waters, because even cannabis, marijuana, THC that people want to smoke for adult use purposes per se has CBD in it as well. It's just smaller amounts. And the hemp has no THC in it is really what the big difference is. So these CBD plants, hemp plants are different.
Can you explain why the Farm Bill is very big to the CBD industry here in Florida?
So the federal farm bill that had passed, I believe it was December 20th of 18 is when they signed it, has significantly changed the infrastructure of hemp plants in this country. And that's the hemp and the CBD that you're talking about that is being sold over the counter throughout this state and around the country right now is CBD derived from hemp plants, not from the cannabis plant. And so as a result of them doing that, they provided an infrastructure for states to create production and the sales of this product throughout the country. They remove it from the Federal Controlled Substance Act. And so that law enforcement doesn't have an excuse, it prevents them from criminalizing these hemp products and CBD products. And just over the past week, there's been multiple different reports out, Sarasota, our Commissioner of Agriculture talking about it, and other articles regarding it being illegal right now, which we believe it shouldn't be, and we have to make sure that we change that.
At what point do they say, hey, we're going to stop testing your flower every time it comes in? Because each plant is different. I guess that's looking from a law enforcement point, that is the issue.
Well, and I can't say that I don't necessarily, on the one side, blame law enforcement. They're dealing with a very difficult issue right now and the difference of these two plants. And especially when you're dealing with hemp flower, it looks very much like the cannabis flower. I'd really like to get them to understand hemp should be a replacement for cigarettes and tobacco and not a replacement for people wanting to get high. They're two totally different substances, and people are not using hemp to get high. They're using it to relieve anxiety and for medical purposes. Now, with regards to law enforcement, you know, number one, their testing has to improve. So if they're only testing for whether or not it does or does not have THC, they're not doing sufficient testing in accordance with the Farm Bill. And so they have to increase and get the technology and the science both for the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and local agencies to be able to test for that so they can distinguish it.
Alex, I have a question about we keep talking about this isn't the thing that people sit on the couch and hang out and do on the weekend, but we haven't talked about what people do when they use CBD. What are they using it for? Can you talk about the people that come into your store and purchase the product?
The demographics of people that use CBD is over the age of 35. They do experience anxiety, chronic pain. They've lived long enough to have some sort of ache. And CBD is, according to published medical studies that we help provide, that were funded by taxpayers, an anti-inflammatory to start. That's also not a blood thinner, with absolutely no potential for abuse, according to the World Health Organization and the National Institute on Drug Abuse. According to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, it also has efficacy for treating substance use disorders. So we believe that because of this, it should remain open as it is now, but more clearly defined to protect our small businesses. Inevitably, this will be the cash crop, the billion-dollar industry that will save Florida farmers because of having a new product not only that can make 25,000 different textile products with just the fiber, but additionally the CBD as well.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, guys. I look forward to more talking with you. This issue will not end today.
That was Florida Public Radio's Blaze Ganey speaking with cannabis legal expert Michael Minardi and Alex Petrick, who runs a shop in Tallahassee that sells CBD products. The presidents of Florida's 28 colleges just wrapped up a two-day Tallahassee meeting in the run-up to this year's lawmaking session. The event was under the auspices of the Association of Florida Colleges, and this year the association's chief point guy at the Capitol is the Capital City's own Jim Murdaugh, the president of Tallahassee Community College. In contrast to some past years, he says his presidential colleagues are more optimistic when it comes to the amount of state money the schools can expect from the legislature.
I have such respect for the legislature and the job they do in trying to manage the multiple ways in which the budget is pulled. We do know that Hurricane Michael is a major impact to the revenue that they'll have to work with and the expenditures that we'll need to make.
And it's not just the communities in general in the Florida Panhandle that are still struggling to recover from last October's Hurricane Michael.
The primary needs of particular Gulf Coast State College are infrastructure. Their campus was really severely harmed as a result of this.
Gulf Coast State College is in Panama City, which took a terrible pounding from the storm. Ironically, Murdaugh says the storm not only brought hardship, but also potential opportunity for those attending Florida's colleges. That's because of the school's strong programs in workforce development.
The college system is the system that produces the talent, allows Florida's economy to thrive. So even those folks that were adversely impacted as a result of Hurricane Michael are looking for jobs. And if they have a job, they're looking for a better job.
Of course, any legislative session boils down to the question of state funding. Most years, the governor's proposed spending plan is at least a starting point for lawmakers' deliberations. And on that score, Murdaugh says he and his Florida College presidential colleagues are happy.
We were very pleased to see the governor's recommended budget that addresses needed funding for the college system and for the tech system to try to focus on workforce skills, not just degrees. I mean, we certainly need degrees, but there's a huge focus on that. We're front and center in that conversation and candidly very optimistic that the legislature will do what they can.
Another reason for glee, as far as the colleges are concerned, is the fact that Joe Negron is no longer the president of the Florida Senate. During his tenure over the last two sessions, Negron was openly hostile towards the state college system. This session, the Senate president is Bill Galvano. Between him and the new House Speaker, Jose Oliva, Murdaugh believes they're likely to be more in the college's corner than were their predecessors.
Both have expressed a desire to be supportive of the college's requests to the extent that they can. I have to give that disclaimer. I mean, there's a lot of competing interests they've got to juggle.
And should the legislative leadership or governor's office need more reasons to support Florida's 28 colleges, a very persuasive guy named Jim Murdaugh is less than 10 minutes away. One year after the Parkland massacre that left 17 dead and many more wounded, pain and grief clouded the usually cheery Valentine's Day this year. Communities across Florida took a moment to remember the lives lost, but Sean Mulcahy reports advocates also made their voices heard once again.
Now all our reminders of high school bring us back to the day when we heard bullets pierce our friends as their young hearts faded away. We watched as our youth was raw before our eyes, filled with pain and fear, longing for the lost blue sky.
February 14, 2018, 17 people did not get to go home to their families. 17 people were taken from this earth way too soon because of one single person's senseless act of hatred. 17 families have gone through a full year of holidays, birthdays, and special events without their loved ones.
And I can't do this day. I just can't. Thank you for coming. It helps me that we did this, because today's a bad day.
There in the garden, like a snake in the grass. See.
It's still overwhelming. I can't believe that it's honestly been a year. I've been approached by a few students this evening, and they always recognize his smile.
I believe that God can and will bring good out of evil, even out of the greatest evil.
This is everyday life for every parent that loses a kid like I did. We live it every single day. So for today to be any different, it's not. Every day is the same pain from when you wake up to when you go to sleep.
A year hasn't healed the wounds ripped open by the deadly Parkland shooting. But those affected have turned their pain and anger into motivation. Students and activists are continuing efforts for gun control. Survivor David Hogg wants to put an assault weapons ban on the 2020 ballot.
It's time that we as Americans recognize that every type of gun violence, no matter how many victims there are, no matter if it's one person that's injured or 49 that are killed, that gun violence is a preventable issue and must be addressed in every zip code. And every weapon that is used must be addressed.
The fight for gun reform is heating up at the Capitol. Democratic lawmakers, backed by advocacy groups like Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense, are rallying for tighter regulations. Orlando Representative Anna Escamani.
We will take nothing less than meaningful, comprehensive gun safety legislation that you've already heard from today. And this does include a state ban, all semi-automatic assault weapons and large capacity magazines, comprehensive universal background checks, a refusal of policies like open carry and campus carry, alongside legislation that does not arm our teachers.
There are 9 Democratic-sponsored measures, with more still being drafted, that aim to crack down on gun violence. Among the proposals are banning assault weapons, imposing stricter concealed carry license requirements, and conducting universal background checks. Last year saw one of the state's most comprehensive gun reform packages in decades, raising the age to buy a handgun from 18 to 21 and creating the Guardian program, which places armed guards on school campuses. A commission charged with making school safety recommendations wants the Guardian program to arm teachers as well. That move has faced blowback from Democrats and groups like the Florida Education Association. Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri chairs the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Commission.
There's a campus monitor, a coach, 20-year Navy guy, former military police officer, Chris Hickson, who walked through that door unarmed to go confront Cruz, and he was shot. And when he was shot, he fell to the ground, and he crawled across the hallway to a place of safety before Nicholas Cruz came by and executed him. If Chris Hickson was allowed to carry a gun, Chris Hickson would have shot and killed Nicholas Cruz, or at least tried.
The Republican-controlled legislature has largely worked to expand gun rights over the years, not scale them back. And this session is no different. A bill by Pensacola Republican Representative Mike Hill would remove all restrictions put in place post-Parkland. And a measure allowing for concealed carry on college campuses has been filed for the 3rd year in a row. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sean Mulcahy.
We want to express our deepest appreciation to member stations WLRN in Miami and WGCU in Fort Myers for their sonic contributions to this report. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, this evening at 9, public television stations across Florida will air an award-winning documentary called Resilience, The Biology of Stress and the Science of Hope. It's being shown partly to honor the victims and survivors of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas tragedy, and it's partly an attempt to prevent violence and other trauma from metastasizing into mental or physical illness. We get that story from Margie Menzel.
It used to be conventional wisdom among medical and scientific professionals that young children couldn't recall abuse or neglect they had witnessed or endured. But the documentary Resilience explodes that myth.
The kids are young, they're very resilient, they don't know what's going on, they won't remember anyway. Well, the child may not remember, but the body remembers.
In fact, trauma is common, as the documentary shows. Resilience is about the impact of what's called adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, on a person's physical and mental health. In the late 1990s, Dr. Robert Ando was involved with the first surveys to ask patients about emotional, physical, or sexual abuse, the loss of a parent, or having been exposed to hunger or violence.
28% had been physically abused. 27% grew up with substance abuse in their homes. 13% witnessed their mothers being physically abused. One in five had been sexually abused. I was the first person to see this data. Wow. I was in my study. I had the software on my computer. I saw this and I wept.
According to the Harvard University Center on the Developing Child, more than two-thirds of the population report experiencing one adverse childhood experience, and nearly a quarter have experienced three or more. The more ACEs you've experienced, the greater your risk of poor outcomes later in life, including severely increased risk of heart disease, obesity, diabetes, depression, addiction, smoking, poor academic achievement, missed work, and early death. Chris Lawley is the executive director of Prevent Child Abuse Florida.
We tend to divide health into mental health and physical health, but the truth is they're not divided. They're one.
The stress of childhood trauma, like regularly being hit or belittled, can physically harm the body and brain. As Resilience shows, the study of how ACEs affect health began in an obesity clinic in San Diego, where Dr. Vincent Felitti was shocked that half his patients were dropping out of the program, despite their success at losing weight. Then he learned 55% of them had been sexually abused as children.
And I vividly remember thinking, this can't be true. People would know. Somebody would have told me. Wasn't that what medical school was for?
Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris was just as shocked to learn that life expectancy could vary by 11 years depending on the San Francisco neighborhood where one was born.
When you look at adverse childhood experiences, they're actually a stronger predictor of risk of ischemic heart disease than any of the traditional risk factors. When you think about high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or even smoking.
Say, ah! Ah, that's great!
And yet, I was never trained on this in one day in medical school.
Today we know more about the damage caused by ACEs. As Chris Lawley says, healers tend more often to ask, what happened to you, instead of, what's wrong with you? And Florida is the first state to show resilience, just as the state marks the one-year anniversary of the Parkland shootings. Lawley hopes the documentary will help build more resilience statewide.
The involvement by the families and students from Marjory Stoneman Douglas, this movement, the Adverse Childhood Experiences study, and the resulting knowledge scientifically that prevention actually helps and saves lives and dollars and prevents injuries can only serve us well as we move into the future.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Margie Menzel.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. We also thank Margie Menzel and our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Please join us again next week at this time for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.